When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey folks, quick announcement before we get going. Want to shout out Ashley in our Discord, who is hosting a office trivia event this Sunday, the 21st at 3 p.m. Central Time. It's a great opportunity to meet some folks in the Discord community. Come hang out, have some fun. I'm going to plan to be there hanging out during the trivia as well. So if you haven't tried out Discord or you're wondering what's going on in there, great chance to come in and hang out. Kayla's also hosted some Jackbox games through trivia, so I have a feeling there's going to be more and more of this going on. So yeah, get in there this weekend. A link to join that Discord is always in the episode descriptions of this podcast. All right, on to the cold open.
Sean, when is the last time you said fast food's fine? I feel like that's not something you say very often.
You know, it's creeping in. It's creeping in now. I'm starting to finally be like, I'll take a chicken sandwich from Burgerville. Thank you.
Is that okay? A chicken sandwich from Burgerville is a step removed, I would say, from fast food. One step removed.
It's okay. Yeah. He's got to work his way in. It's okay.
I love it.
I think I'll pass on Taco Bell.
Stay out as long as you can. Have you seen that video where they're introducing the Taco Bell thing where they announce all the new items and it's like an app? It's like the guy's like Steve Jobs. Everybody's like, yeah. And he's like, we're going to have chicken nuggets. They're like, yeah.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host, Secret Agent Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, Scholastic Speakers of Pennsylvania.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
A wiser man than I, the great Sir William Joel, once wrote something that I think sums up what Scranton is all about. We're all living here in Allentown for the Pennsylvania we never found. No, I found my Pennsylvania. And you know what? It's not in New York.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we're continuing our location series, which I have called Draw Me a Map, Mama. Alex and Edwin decided not to call it that, but I will call it that.
Wait, really?
you were not enthusiastic about that idea, but I'm going to call it the Draw Me a Map, Mama series.
I don't even remember
that. Like Call Me a Map Drama, am I right?
Yeah, whoa.
Or Trauma.
I hate the drama.
You love it.
I love it. This week we're talking about The Manager's Office. The Manager's Office. We'll get into that, and then we'll head to the conference room where we have some thank yous, some apologies, perhaps a blind ranking, if time allows. We'll see how long we talk about The Manager's
Office. I hate being titillated, but that sounds pretty good.
What is in store? You'll have to stay tuned. Alex, before we get into all of that, do we have any housekeeping to start off with?
No, not much. No real housekeeping here. We're just kind of grooving right now. We are producing pods left and right, our other show Captive Audience, and this show, it's just a lot. We got a lot of schedules. We got a lot of things in our lives going on. So we're just getting it done. You know, we're just trying to get everyone home on time. So I will urge you to check out patreon.com/Michael Scott, where, again, those ad-free episodes can be found. Those monthly exclusive mailbags can be found. Access to our private Discord channels, all sorts of things. And while you're at it, join the Discord. Wow. Get in there. I got to say, Well, we're giving out a bunch of thank yous later on for some stuff that the Tots have banded together. And the Tots are increasingly becoming probably my favorite group of people on planet Earth. I'll just put it out there. And we'll get to why later. But you can
John
join
and I
that
are a distant 22nd.
you can join that exclusive group for $5 a month at patreon.com/MichaelScotts. And a lot of goodies coming up. We were just talking, the three of us, before this episode started about sketching out the rest of the year for this pod. And we're going to go some places. And you want to be on that rocket ship with us. So that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, very excited. Every week we just kind of pick something to talk about. But we're finally, 5 years into this, going to start plotting it out. And I think we have some really exciting ideas. Yeah.
We also may literally be going many different places. I don't know if you've noticed over the course of the trajectory of this show, I've gone from Portland to LA to Switzerland. So for now, I either go to Antarctica or outer space. So I hope you'll join us as I venture out into the unknown. Yeah.
Careful listeners, we just love you to know, I haven't recorded not in Portland in a while, and that's going to be the case for a while, so get off my ass.
He either records or he quits because he's not there.
He will burn this building to the ground. Okay, let's get into today's topic, the manager's office.
Oh, burning!
Edwin. Edwin, why are we talking about the manager's office this week?
Yeah.
Whoa. Didn't know you were going to ask me that. Okay. Well, I am glad you asked me that. This does continue our location series, which we haven't revisited in quite a while. I think mm-hmm. you could look at maybe The Office Walks Into a Bar from a few weeks ago as something along those lines. But within this series, we kind of wanted to look at the physical spaces within the office and talk about what happens and how they're really differentiated, how they create different moments and different themes and moods. And this kind of began as Michael's office, with a look at that space that only Michael Scott could really occupy the way that he does. But the reality is that many other characters share that space over the course of the 9 seasons. So I think we'll kind of trace it from the beginning to the end in terms of what it means for Michael and the rest of the staff, the different moments that happen therein, and then how different characters treat, enter, and exit that space. But we'll kind of look at how that little office within an office, what that means to the show.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead.
I'll go ahead, guys. No.
The pilot of The Office begins in Michael's office. It begins with Michael talking to Jim, and then Michael calling on Jim's behalf. So there is like an element of Michael's office being this really focused central space from the very beginning of the show. It's also where he fake fires Pam. And I'm not just going to run through a series of moments, but like it does have this unique sort of focus and function at the very, very beginning of the show.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've talked before about who's the main character, who's the real main character of The Office, but certainly for like the beginning of the show, I mean, Michael is the main focus. He's really the hero of the story. And this is his safe space. You know, I mean, He like you said, he has control over this space, but it's sometimes it's also where he has to just go and hide from everybody.
Yeah, Michael is either on stage in front of everyone or he is within his office. And that's kind of how it feels a lot of the time. When he's out talking to the main office or in the bullpen, earlier in the show, he has much more presence, more authority. They're more afraid of him, I think. And that sort of changes over the course of the show, I think, as we develop more familiarity with everyone, all the characters, I should say. It seems like there's less and less tension when Michael is going out to speak to everyone. It's less more as Michael is the boss and everyone else are his employees, and more like Michael is one of the employees in the group. But there's also an element of Michael, like when he's saying things out to everyone, they start to question him. They start to, you know, maybe chip away at what he thinks are great ideas. They don't laugh at his jokes. And Michael sometimes like withdraws and locks himself in the office. So there's kind of this barrier between himself, his world, and what he's thinking, and then also what's going on outside.
Yes.
Within the bullpen, within the annex, within every other space.
Edwin, you use the term withdrawal, and I think oftentimes it is equally a retreat in a militaristic sense, where he needs to He needs to retreat and get some distance between him and the soldiers out there. Draw the blinds, yeah. Lick his wounds often, in some cases.
And if anyone has seen a small brass key.
Yeah, right, where he needs a place he can shut the walls, literally, close things off, and do whatever it is he needs to do. And for someone like Michael Scott, that is a sanctuary. That is an extremely important place that he needs, where he can just be himself or not. And the times, we'll talk about all these times, but it's what's great as a setting for comedy are the times when that line is invaded, and it goes both ways, but oftentimes there's scenes where the whole cast will jam into his office while he's on a voice, while he's on a speakerphone call. Or they know that he's just going to stay in there, so they got to get their way in. Or, you know, something like the carpet, where his holy place is totally compromised. Yeah. And he, you know, or he just, he needs a place he can go. Ah, you know, I'm so glad to be back in a country that has movies. He has that same energy and feeling in his office a lot of the times, which is, finally I can just clean air. I don't have to deal with
the background of his Windows desktop is the wide open spaces. He has the best air conditioning. Yeah.
You mentioned the decorations too, Sean. It's a canvas for Michael, the office, where his toys, the things he cares about most, he puts up on the wall or hides in the safe in the closet.
Real quick, I mean, we should, you know, some of these items in his office, of course, everybody knows about the Seiko timepiece certificate that he has just behind his head on the wall. This is something that he got from buying like a Seiko's a relatively cheap watch. So it's not like having like a Rolex framed thing on the wall. And of course, you know, he's got his world's best boss mug always on the desk. And then this is something that I was confused about, and I just didn't look into it quite yet. But in the opening of the TV show, we always see him adjusting the Dundee at the front of his desk. But is that Dundee actually there? Because then in season 7, we see him actually set it on the desk.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I
don't think it's...
That's a good question. It seems like it's there sometimes and sometimes it's not. Because I'll say this, too. I've also, prepping for this episode, one of the episodes I watched was The Job. And once he returns and he comes back and the office is painted black, the only thing he takes out of the boxes is the Dundee. And he puts it right on that spot in the credits. So I think it's... Maybe it comes and goes. I could see Michael being someone who perhaps travels with the Dundee from time to time, or he takes it home when he really needs it.
Yeah.
Needs to feel good. I don't know.
Of course, he's also got perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's also got his toys, his train whistle that we see him using with Sasha in the Bring Your Daughter to Work Day, as well as the Dunder Mifflin delivery truck. He has a tiny golf cart. He has the chattering teeth. He has a couple of hamsters with boxing gloves on them.
Oh yeah. You see him use that in the blooper.
Yeah, that's right.
he's going to Leslie David Baker, and he goes, okay, this is an offensive thing to say. He goes, I'm going to give you a nappy head because you're Leslie.
Because you're Leslie.
Well, that's not the character's name. And everyone starts laughing. Yeah.
Isn't there a time, too, where he's got I think it's when Stanley's, like, leaving for the day. And, like, Michael is wearing the fake teeth. And he's got the punching hamster on his hand, like a puppet or something.
Oh, because Stanley thinks it's five. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Sorry. It's not that he thinks it's five. It's at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So it is five and he leaves. Does Michael also have the ball that absorbs and retracts?
Yes, that's right.
Do you know the actual name of that? Of that type of toy or that thing? It's called a Hoberman sphere.
Whoa.
It's like a Rubik's cube. This is a Hoberman sphere.
Cool. Is that what happens when one sphere resorbs the other sphere?
Yes, and now has the power of a adult sphere and a baby sphere.
Tiny sphere, yes.
There's a Newton's cradle.
Oh, yeah.
That's the ball.
That's the Newton's cradle, yep.
Another great blooper when Ryan walks in and it starts going and he can't stop it.
Yeah.
And they have to reset the take. Yeah.
He also has like a, he has a bookshelf next to him with binders. On that bookshelf is a framed picture of a turkey sandwich.
I don't know if you've ever out of the Sean Roney collection.
A dinner sandwich, as it were.
Or as we discovered in the Rumble at the Bronx, which we just recorded for captive audience, can breakfast. Be used as a breakfast sandwich. Triangle cut turkey sandwich for breakfast. Mm-mm-mm.
Let's see. He's also got a, he usually also has a Union Jack flag, the Great British flag, which I am sure is probably a nod to the office origins, to the British office.
Yeah. It's going to be mental.
Besides, he actually has several globes. He's got a grenade paperweight, and just several other like little classic toys.
Grenade paperweight.
I always love when they open his little closet and there's like a can of Pringles in there for some reason.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of glimpses into the closet, but the times he goes there, it seems like Michael takes his what he stores there very seriously. You know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's where he's got his Salesman of the Year awards. Mm-hmm. That he goes, and it's where he keeps Bell's bourbon and yeah, bullets, right, or whatever. Right. the murder game.
Inside the door of that, there's a black and white photo of Jan that he has there for a while.
What, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
There's been some real eagle eyes on the internet who have lists of both everything awesome ever seen on his desk and in his cabinet. Do you want to know everything else? Real quick, run through what else he has in his cabinet.
I mean, why? Might as well give it.
All right,
sing it.
He's got he's got another Dundee in there, an unreadable plaque. He has a Michael Scott Lackawanna County plaque of some kind. We don't know what it is. There's a shot glass, a dark blue mug. He's got a toothbrush with toothpaste, stick of deodorant, a bottle of Pepto-Bismol, small can of Pringles, which you called, and two tropical shirts neatly folded and stacked on each other. On the other shelf, a safe. Inside that safe, a silver tea set on a tray and Michael's sales awards, which is Michael G. Scott, Top Salesman, Dunder Mifflin, 96, and a Certificate of Achievement, Top Salesman of the Year, Dunder Mifflin, 97. I love that small detail that they went from a award to a Certificate
plaques
of Achievement. Yeah. Yeah, stop doing the plaques.
How do they know? He has a tea set in the safe?
On the top shelf of the safe is a silver tea set on a tray.
Amazing.
And then by the time the coup comes around, so we see all that in Dwight's speech. By the time the coup comes around, on the inside of the door is a picture of Carol, has been placed over the frame picture of Jan. Again, none of this you would ever know. It's just there.
Yeah.
By the time the coup comes around, silver tea tray, gone. Replaced by a stack of DVDs, including Varsity Blues. Why does he keep that in the safe? We'll never know.
So that nobody watches it except on movie day. He also has his famous Rolodex is on the desk. That kind of gets mentioned a few times. In fact, it's, you know, sort of a valuable item when it comes to the Michael Scott Paper Company in season 5. Yep. And of course, he has a loaded gun in the desk.
And a bunch of letters cut out of magazines.
Yeah, that's right.
A loaded gun in my desk. Oh,
what? You have a loaded gun in your desk.
You have a loaded gun in your desk. His screenplay is in the desk, right? That's when they find that in the client.
And the joke book.
What do you think? Just a quick sidebar. What happened the day that Michael obviously must have just impulsively went out and bought a gun? What happened? Because I could see Michael with like kind of the Charlie Brown energy or just thinking and just driving straight to the gun store and walking in and just being like, I want a gun. Like, what happened?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do not think he actually has a gun.
Oh, you don't? That's I think all. He does.
I think it's similar to like Michael going to the bar and asking for a shot. They'd be like, of what? Whiskey.
Yeah.
What kind? Yeah.
Want a gun. Okay.
What kind? I think that just about covers everything in there. So yeah, maybe let's start back at the beginning. As Edwin was saying, where in the pilot we get Michael and Jim. This is also a famous. I feel like this is also where Michael goes to talk on the phone, of course.
Yeah,
and yeah. We open with an iconic phone call.
Yeah,
you are a gentleman and a scholar.
The people.
Michael, like, that's where Michael also has his most power. So where, you know, that's where he fake fires Pam and eventually fake fires, or Ryan is there. And he does fake fire Ryan later on, but we don't get to see it. He was not happy when I gave him the job and then didn't. You've been X'd, Punk, in one of the most dated references on the show. what I love about Michael's office, or the office when Michael is manager, is that it creates this one-on-one power dynamic where he talks to one character at a time. He brings in Dwight, his sort of confidant, consigliere, like his advisor. What do you know about Meredith? He's trying to write something for the card. Like, there's this sort of one-on-one element that Michael has with people, because they come in, they sit in his office. Maybe if you're Creed, you tell him not to fire you, that you should fire Devin. Like, there's all these things that happen. Mm-hmm. Pam is called in there all the time. Like, Michael is the master of his domain in there. And he can, when people, characters come in there, he can really address them as the boss, which is difficult for him to do out in the bullpen without other characters chiming in or listening or telling him that things are wrong or inappropriate. So it is a kingdom.
You are right. At the second he leaves his office and walks out of that door and like addresses everyone, I feel like he loses about 40% of his authority just by not being in his office versus when he calls someone in and closes the door. It's like, you know, you're talking to your boss. There's just a slightly different feel, even though your boss is Michael Scott.
Yeah. It's funny too that like it's his room where he has the control, he has the power, until it is the room where he is reprimanded. It's usually the space where when Jan comes to town, they go in there, they shut the door, and she tells him everything he's doing wrong. I mean, and that happens as early as Diversity Day.
Or on the phone. Also, yes. With Jan. You're dropping an A-bomb on me here. Really, Michael? I'm dropping an atomic bomb on you.
He's under the desk.
He's also where he calls David Wallace, Jan, Joe, all these different, damn it, Stephanie, put me through to him. Like, he's always there making the call of the corporate.
Right.
And
how many plots of episodes have to do with Michael learning something in private in his office? And him deciding what to do with that information. I mean, that kicks off a lot of episodes. There's like really the only place in the office where that happens, where secrets are made and kept and spilled.
I mean, I'm just imagining from healthcare where he says, before I tell you, like he's, you know, before I tell you what the big surprise is, would you like to tell me what you think the big surprise is? We all think you don't have a surprise. You know, so he's just been in there all day calling the mine shaft, calling the travel agencies.
Yep.
They all know that nothing's going on. Yeah. But we know healthcare, it has no content.
Healthcare is a really great episode to talk about the manager's office, because Michael is using it as his sanctuary, as his hiding place. I think that's where we get Kevin saying, you know, it has to come out sometime. To go to the bathroom.
Kevin.
Does he even go to the bathroom? Oh, he does.
Just pooping. You know how I be. And I also love, too, that we get, him shutting the blinds. Of course, we're all very grateful that those blinds don't fully cover the window, because that is how we get so many shots of Michael hunkering down in there. But I love when we get Michael calling out to calling Pam, like,
Pam, hey, Michael, Pam, Scott, Michael Scott.
Where are you?
Or like in Koi Pond when Aaron calls in, Michael, people are starting to talk.
Or in what episode does he figure out he has the like PA capability?
Oh, yes. Well, it's a cold open, so I don't know. That's a tough one.
I just watched that. Why am I blanking?
Toby Flanderson, you're being called to the
principal. That's one of the rare ones where he can...
Hello, Dr. Michael Scott.
Yeah, I was going to say, in that scene...
Can I poke it with a pin?
In that scene, he has public and private calls that he does not mean for either one to happen,
University of North Carolina...
Jim has to cut the wire. It's a great use of that space. Yes. Like you said, Michael realizing his power and then using it to immediately undercut himself.
Well, I think Jim undercuts himself, but yeah.
True. I more meant him calling the doctor.
Yeah.
With everyone on the line.
I mean, Michael on the phone is great, of course. Like, yeah, there's several times, you know, the way that he uses that phone, he likes to make the call on speakerphone for the cameras, but when all of a sudden it gets serious, he needs to pick it up, pick up the receiver, and sometimes hide under the desk as he's on the phone.
What do you mean it was? If that's the case, my lady, then you have hurt me greatly. There's also, I mean, in that, there's also, you know, I'm thinking of when he brings everyone in during performance review to ask him about what their interpretation is of Jan's voicemail.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
So, like, there's also, you know, Michael summons people in to his base to ask them questions, to,
correct.
You know, if he's talking to Kelly, he's like, why don't you just laugh a little bit and pretend like you're crying?
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah. It's a recruitment center, his office.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important for the structure of the show, for it to work, that there is a space where Michael can do that. So they can set up different shots, so things can come and go out of the office. Like, to have the main character have his own little space is very, very important to the show. Like, if Michael worked out with everyone, I think the show would lose something there. It's to have that definition of those four walls around Michael is helpful. Because, like, for instance, he only does his talking heads in his office. Everyone else is in the conference room. And just from what it looks like visually, it's that Michael is set apart from everyone else. And for some, Michael's talking heads are the best. In my opinion, far and away number one draft pick of talking heads. And he's got, it just looks different when he does it. And so when I see it on screen, it's like, I always jump to attention if it's a Michael talking head isn't off in his office, because that's where he's the most vulnerable. He's the most open. He goes on long rants. It's great.
I mean,
sorry, I cut you off, Edwin. What were you saying?
No, well, I mean, I'm just thinking about when Michael has the sales contest. I guess the episode is The Carpet. I'm trying to think of when he does it.
Yes.
And they all start to kind of like, Michael is out there trying to be the salesperson. He's doing everything like that he used to do. And they're all like, well, it's not exactly 1993 anymore. You know, he's like, it's part of the sales experience. You know, like, he can't be the salesperson that he was out on the floor with everyone. He can't be the employee just with them anymore. He's got to be he has to be the boss. I think also, you know, I don't mean to jump ahead. We can move back and forth through time. But this podcast actually was recorded in the past, dear listener. But when Jim has his office, he says, Michael, can I speak to you in my office? And Michael says, sure, but first, can I speak to you in my office? So, like, there's like this element of power that comes with having the office, having the space, being able to draw people in, and it is important to protect Michael. It's kind of like it's kind of like in the early seasons, Michael is the only one who's wearing a jacket. A lot of times in the office, Mike, it feels like Michael is the only one wearing a jacket. Season two, maybe, and beyond. Season one, Michael, he doesn't wear a jacket all the time, but it does feel like this little extra layer of formality that is on Michael that isn't on. Let's say I'm thinking of like Jim, Dwight, Ryan, these characters, Oscar. I suppose other characters wear a jacket, and this isn't the perfect analogy, but it does seem like Michael has one extra layer as opposed to a lot of the rest of his staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I mean, The Carpet is such an important episode in talking about The Office because it is like, you know, at least for the majority of the episode, we might believe that he's been attacked, kind of, you know, somebody did this like to get revenge on him or something like that. And when Michael loses his office, he loses so much of his power. Yeah. You know, like even, you know, Dwight kind of saying like it's not, you know, this such and such year anymore, and everyone laughs, and like, you know, like he's got a problem with how like Phyllis is like the sulfuric smell, and everyone's like, well, she sent an email, and like, you know, he's just yeah. he's just like he's got nothing, and it's kind of like it's almost like he's naked now, just being kind of out in the bullpen.
You know what, it dawns on me now that I'm confusing a couple episodes, I think. Which is only to say that, all right, in The Carpet, what happens is Michael is out there because they're fixing the office, and Michael makes the sale, and he goes, read it and weep. And he sticks the post-it note on Phyllis's forehead.
Right, yeah.
And then they see him, Roy and Daryl see him dancing. They're like, what is he doing? I think he's dancing. And Michael's like, you know what? Not a good day for a sales contest. But in episode 6, the manager and the salesman, that's when Michael...
Of course.
Does the, you know, Dwight says, you know, we don't really announce our sales out loud anymore. It's not really 1992 anymore. And then, yeah, exactly. It's not a farty dirt patch, as Michael would call it. Times have changed. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Well, I mean, that's, you're right. That's the other time that he kind of loses the office and realizes that, man, he really needs it. And of course, that's when we, like, you know, Aaron kind of sets up the office very special for Michael. There's the keyboard. There's right. Apparently many items underneath the desk, like a keyboard that can play little beats, a little bossa nova beat. And he's just like, I love what she plays the beat for him. He's just like, oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Little bossa nova. Yeah, it's both Michael. It is Michael's suit of armor is his office. And it's for his like... For as thin and flimsy as Michael's ego is and his sense of self-confidence, like, I think you're right. When he having that office, he sort of intertwined that with who he is as a manager, that like that status level, at least he can rest his hat on that. Like, he has no land. He has no family. He has no friends. He has no lover. He's nothing. But but he is a manager with his own office. Like, that is extremely important to him. And I think the times when that is taken from him, it kind of comes crashing down, and he sort of panics when that happens.
There are a couple ahead.
Well, there is one space that kind of supersedes Michael's office, and that is the conference room when a corporate figure is there to work for the day. So when Jan sits up in the conference room, when Charles sits up in the conference room, when Joe sits up in the conference room, then they have this bigger space than Michael, and they have more authority than Michael in his own space.
Yeah.
So they kind of
for
draw
Dwight,
that
it's only
parallel.
A workspace.
For Dwight, it's only a workspace, and Jim locks him inside.
Robert California could be on that list, even though Michael wasn't
there. Yeah, yes, absolutely. Robert California, very, very good call. Because like then it becomes, Michael's office, the manager's office, is secondary to the conference room. It's physically bigger. It has a person with more influence, and then it just becomes like Michael's office has less and less power. They can see into the conference room. Charles can call people in. I'm just thinking the line that's in my head is he's like, knock once for yes, we'll knock twice for no. And Joe says, how many knocks does it take to get you to do some work?
Besides the times that he the office is kind of he loses the office, he does give it away a couple of times. In season 3, actually it's just in season 3. First in the coup, he gives the office to Dwight as a sort of a teaching moment. He tries to he pretends that Dwight is now the manager, and
I know.
But yeah, that's like, you know, that's his thing that he got, you know, he has to hand over the office to Dwight. And then but at the end of season 3 he graciously gives Dwight the job of manager when he is so certain that he will be getting promoted to corporate.
Who's ready to
at
work?
Which point, yeah, Dwight paints the office black. That's the only time we ever see the office change color.
Yeah, it is kind of shocking.
First order
when
of business.
See it all in black. Yeah.
Promote Andy Bernard to my number two.
First order I of accept, business. Accepting. As if you had any
as
choice.
As if you had a choice.
I mean,
look,
okay. So
there's
we
a
can
look
talk
on
about...
Andy's face after Dwight says that. It's just in the back in the corner. It's incredible. I urge you to watch that moment.
It is worth acknowledging these times that Dwight has this power. As Jim says during healthcare, this is the smallest amount of power I've ever seen go to anyone's head. Actually, that's in basketball. But Dwight is known for having a small amount of power go to his head. And when he's in the office, or when he's in the manager's seat, you in the boss's chair, Dwight's appetite for power is finally met.
Yeah.
And it is nice to see in a few different
You'll never
cases.
Guess so, where I'm yeah. sitting.
The coup, the job, Dwight K. Schrute acting manager. I do love seeing Dwight in there. And then at the end of the show as well, when Dwight is the manager. There is it's just amazing to see how much he relishes that power that Michael once had, where Dwight mm-hmm. used to stand behind him. And try to get the gum out of his hair. Now Dwight finally is the one sitting in the chair.
How do you feel about continuing on this other people who have inhabited Michael's office, and then we'll come back to some more Michael in his office moments.
I'll allow it.
I think we can stick with Dwight for a second, and I mean when he Dwight K. Schrute acting manager, obviously we start to get. Changing the decor. He gets a huge marble desk in somehow.
Yeah, the Saddam Hussein replica.
Again, that's kind of on par with like where does the conference room table go when everyone's in there? Like how did that marble desk get in there?
Yeah. That is I'm sure Nate helped him. Or did all of it himself. Mm-hmm. He also has a piranha in a fish tank, mm-hmm. And the Beaumont Adams on display.
Yeah, Jim says, "Whoa, you've really embraced the whole Bond villain aesthetic." And the desk is a replica of Uday Hussein's desk. He saw a picture in Newsweek. I do love too that like Jim is the one character who kind of plays with that authority all the time. Sometimes Jim is there to kind of receive this one-on-one conversation from Michael. But in that moment with Dwight, you know, Dwight calls him in to ask him to be on his best behavior. And he's like, you can't fire me. You're fired. He goes, if you get promoted, we'll get this. You're pre-fired if you get promoted. And if you haven't fallen in love with me first. You know, we talk a lot about Dwight moments, how great it is whenever you see Dwight socks. Things like that. Whenever Dwight is truly gasping in alarm or gasping in surprise. Like there's something really great that happens there.
Yes, indeed. Of course he blows it.
Quickly. Oh, sorry. Oh, finish sorry. Up. We could take a break and talk about the rest of the inhabitants of the office, but finish your thought and then we're going to do that.
Yeah, finish up.
You know what? We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Michael Scott Podcast Company. Talking about the manager's office today and times when other characters inhabit the office. After Dwight K. Schrute acting manager, he, of course, loses the position of acting manager by firing a gun in the office. And the employee with the most seniority takes the seat, which is Creed Bratton. Creed doesn't seem to gain any real authority over anyone when he holds the office. It doesn't seem like he's redecorated anything. I don't know if you guys noticed anything. But he does sit in there and make several phone calls to Dunder Mifflin's top clients, or Pam Beasley doing several characters.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm in the lead up to Dwight becoming manager. Jim kind of talks about how well the branch is able to run without a manager, that everyone kind of is able to take care of their own work. As Joe calls him, the only man that ever turned me down. But with Creed coming in, it's very much the same. It's just they have to mitigate damage that he can do from within that seat.
Mm. Yeah. Pam recruits, what's her name? The assistant that's there for just...
Jordan,
that's right. Yeah.
Jordan Garfield.
To help field those calls to her desk.
Mm-hmm. I just love paper.
Yeah, Creed's not a ton to say about Creed's stint. It's very short. Great Bratton was short-lived, but...
And then we move to D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I made... Do I have this all backwards? D'Angelo's first. D'Angelo's first before... First. God damn it. I'm sorry.
You can move back and forth through time, has been established.
We're going to move back.
We're talking to people in the future.
Did you check your butt?
This is actually the most redecoration that the room goes through, feel like. He brings his Southwest vibe. Yeah.
Very substantial. Yeah.
We get the
shaving happening in the
office. I was just going to say that we get some really great moments. We get the shaving. You know, when Michael and D'Angelo are kind of still buddies, we get them rehearsing for the Dundies.
That's true.
Say it with an accent.
When they first meet and they go to the office that night after the bar, they're goofing around in Michael's office. Mm-hmm. They're doing bits.
Yeah. So they do the talking head.
Home there. Yeah.
Yeah.
D'Angelo.
That just happened. I'm serious.
He brings in the basketball hoop and creates the inner circle and cultivates that space as like a meeting space. So he uses it as like a more of a place that you want to be. Because during Michael's tenure, it doesn't seem like anyone actually wants to be in there with Michael, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and Michael wants to go out and address everyone or pull everyone in the conference room. Versus D'Angelo's just like makes people come to him. He's much more comfortable with that. And like the amount of meetings with I love when the doors are closed in the inner circle and you just like could hear guys goofing around in there through a closed door.
There's no inner
a very relatable circle. Sound. Yeah. That's kind of that geometry of the space was used really well there to sort of like, you know, it doesn't keep sound that well in Michael's office as much as Michael thinks. Shout out to him dancing when at the sugar high.
It's monster.com.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Shout out to our recent Inner Circle episode.
Oh,
also.
Yeah.
Finally,
hey, man,
you know,
can I get a plus five?
D'Angelo dies, or his brain dies. And we get Dwight, we get Creed. And then in season 8, we get Andrew Bernard.
Can you believe it?
Andy holds the manager position for most of season 8 until Nellie Bertram comes and takes it from him. But
she sees an empty seat and she fills it.
Andy's managerial style is quite different from Michael's. Of course, at this point in the show, like the ensemble has so much more confidence when speaking to their branch manager. So he has to rule quite differently, at least for season 8.
Mm-hmm. He kind of redecorates with the Cornell theme. He brings in people in a more collaborative fashion, it kind of seems. I'm just kind of thinking of when he has to screen everyone's Halloween costumes one by one. Dwight, my number two, my enforcer, can you handle this for me? He's got like a different vibe because, you know, the characters don't respect him the same way they did Michael, even though they both have kind of similar unserious vibes. The Andy was one of them for pretty much everyone on staff before he became the manager. So it really changes the way they interact with him. The big change a little bit is Robert coming in because Robert's out of the conference room. Robert's on the phone with Andy. Andy is like so much of season eight is kind of through Andy's perspective, like whether Andy is worthy of the job, whether Andy feels worthy of the job, whether Andy can deliver an experience that the people respond to, whether he has to tattoo something on the hull of the SS Bernard. And so like the office,
the will they won't they with him and Aaron versus.
Yeah. You like,
I was going to say,
I do. She likes you. Why wouldn't you just nope I'm not here.
yeah I was gonna say, but yeah,
now we're cooking.
A couple very uncomfortable conversations between Andy and Aaron are had in his office.
Yeah.
I allude to this.
Sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say he does reprimand Jim and Dwight at some point. And, you know, which is kind of a moment that we never really got with Michael, kind of telling them to knock it off.
I also truly love this moment, and I've brought it up too many times, but when he has the little Christmas dolls up on the top of the shelf.
And he sings,
Christmas time is here. Thanks, guys.
Can I open really, Christmas? I just want a really quick rundown of Andy's desk. Just some of the things he brings. You mentioned a Cornell theme. Obviously, there's the Cornell degree up on the wall where Michael Seiko timepiece used to be, that certificate. Then below that, he's got the Here Comes Treble, I guess, team photo, for lack of a better word. I don't know what you'd say. The yearbook photo of all of them singing, khakis, navy blue blazers. He's got the Cornell hockey player kind of, now it's not a bobblehead, but it looks like a, I don't know what's
the mascot,
like a gnome almost. Yeah it's got the little like Norwegian
Captain
hat.
Salty looking. No
I don't know who it is.
He's got the nautical captain as well. That's who he like knocks off the desk.
Yes. Oh, that right. Too.
Yeah,
he's got, looks like an award of some kind. I'm guessing it's some kind of cheap award he won in college. It looks like a microphone. I assume it's some kind of acapella related award that he got. Various other things. He's got a anchor. It's a bell. It's like a bell, but the handle of it is like an anchor. So I'm like, that's something he probably got from the yacht club as a kid, and he's just always thought it's cool. He's got a Cornell mug. He's got what looks to be I'm going to guess this is a beer stein from his fraternity class that he keeps his pens and his stuff in. So he's just kind of wall-to-wall Cornell.
Yeah, no kidding.
All over this place, and then
with a touch of sailing,
with just a touch of the old yacht club, real wasp, old Andy Bernard.
He of course also has some conversations with Robert California in this office. End the mistakes.
I'm the lizard about.
I'm eager to move to Nelly, but I don't know if there's anything else to add about Andy in this space. I feel like it's less impactful than Michael. We just don't have it for the same amount of time.
He doesn't use it the same way Michael does. And even when Andy's gone later on in season nine for a while and it's vacant for a bit, like there's just, he's not, his office interactions are not as, like you said, as numerous or as memorable as Michael's.
I mean, but, one of the most memorable, I mean, that is a key tenure of Andy's tenure, or, oh my gosh, a key part of Andy's tenure as manager is him not being there. The boat
that's
trip.
That's true.
And that's when I'm thinking of his Dwight coming in, he goes, oh, thank you, Mr. Nardog. Thank you, Mr. Shoot. You know, and then Andy comes back. Hi, Dwight. Andy, you look terrible.
Yeah. Reviewing the Andy Green book, the oral history of the office for this, of like, you know, again, Andy as the manager and all that. It was, I couldn't quite realize how much the entire writing staff and everyone wanted Dwight to be manager. And there was very much a team Dwight, and there wasn't really much of a team Andy except for the network. And the network wanted someone more famous than Rainn Wilson, which is like, Rainn Wilson's been a main cast member of this show for this long. And honestly, the entire, it sounds like really the whole reason Andy became manager was because of The Hangover. And if that movie came out a year later or didn't exist, I think The Office is really different from after Michael leaves.
That's such a bummer. Isn't that a bummer? So weird because like Steve Carell, like people knew him from Bruce Almighty, like
an Anchorman
as a side character. Like, okay. Yeah, you're right. He was in Anchorman. He was on The Daily Show. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, okay. Well, isn't anyone going to stand up for the network? I'm just kidding. I think it's worth acknowledging that between season one and season two, Steve Carell is in the 40-year-old virgin. And that's the thing
that's
that
big.
Also kind of helps.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you're right.
And, because, yes, they know him from other things. I understand that, like, oh, if you have, like, they could probably foresee the same pattern happening with Ed Helms. But, I mean, yes. The Hangover is just such a different movie. And it happens, I think, a few years earlier. Yeah. But anyway, that is really interesting. I mean, I feel like you get much more. I mean, we haven't talked about this, but that would be a fun thing for us to dive into. What if Dwight became manager?
Yeah, I mean, there's
we did what ifs a very long time ago.
We did do a what ifs episode.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, we can bring that back.
If you're hearing this right now, send us in just office what ifs. I would love to do another what if episode.
mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
What if you send us an email?
What if? Nelly.
Let's run through. Yeah, I want to get back to Michael and some other key moments that happen in his office. So of course you cannot leave the manager's desk empty, which of course Jim makes that mistake as well. Otherwise, someone will take it, correct, just like Nelly does, correct, in season eight.
That's how she also came to briefly race an F1 race car. Three of the slowest laps ever recorded. Guys, I will tell you that I went on a run today. My second run, I mean, my first run in 6 months, like 2 weeks ago. And nice. So today was my second run in about 6 months. And that's what goes through my head. That's what I want to label the run on Strava. Three of the slowest laps ever recorded.
Nelly doesn't really redecorate. I don't think
she does make it like a little more like with pillows and like the space, yes, the little bench. Yeah,
when
gold
she first,
Arabian slipper.
When she first goes in there too, Andy's big beer stein is still there. The Cornell degree is still up, and I hadn't noticed this on her nameplate. She just pastes Nelly over Andy and then Tram over Nard. So it says Nelly Burr Tram.
Is still there. Yeah.
Incredible stuff from Nelly.
So good. And then, you know, I think she really like puts the power of the
pyramid
office on display when she's like, get out of my office or I'll dock your pay $100. You know,
Angela. On it.
$200. And he does. He giddy ups right out of there.
Huge whopping penis.
And gosh, I don't know if there's any other moments with Nelly in the office to mention.
I mean, yeah, there's I do love when, you know, she's talking to Pam, she brings everyone in. The lady with the tiny feet, Phyllis. Yeah. there is like, I don't know. I mean, Nelly is very funny in her small moments as manager.
Tries to adopt a kid from that office.
Yeah. I think
a fellow little kid lover taking up the office.
I think she is out of the office by that.
Yeah. She's in the work bus at that point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. That's true. But I think at some point we see her. I thought she has her adoption stuff and she brings Pam in at some point. Mm-hmm. Or Pam goes in there anyway. Whatever.
Sean, I know you wanted to get to some other.
It's all a blur.
It's all a blur. We try to prep for these.
More like Nelly Blur,
everyone.
These ones are hard to prep for because I'm like, I'm not going to watch 19 episodes. Over. I can't do that. Over.
It's a lot to cover.
Yeah.
But David Wallace comes in and he buys Dunder Mifflin back from Sabre and reinstates Andy as the manager. Now the turntables are turned and now Nellie sits across from Andy, back in the manager seat. She uses Shakespeare against him, for a little bit of mercy. And
don't you play the bard card? For
the most part. For the most part, he grants it. Takes us into season 9. We get evil Andy for the end of the show. And then really he just kind of fades out of that manager role through the boat trip and his quest for fame of any kind.
He's allowed to stay on as a salesperson. And then eventually they make Dwight the manager.
Yeah,
that's right.
And Andy, you know, jettisons. He eventually leaves, like you said, to pursue fame of any kind.
Don't know, super care.
Even after Dwight, well, Dwight makes one play at Daryl's office. Daryl, this office is mine now. And he is dragged out. But then later, Dwight stands on the desk and exclaims proudly, finally, Dwight Schrute is manager. And all is right with the universe.
Years of pent-up energy released.
Sean, I know you wanted to get back to some moments with Michael, with other characters. What's still on your mind?
Certainly Pam and Michael share some important moments in his office. As you mentioned, she gets fake fired 2 times in his office. She is obviously called in regularly. Sometimes she's just kind of sitting in there as other characters come in. As sort of Michael's assistant in that role. But she does in Fun Run, season 4, episode 1, knock on the door and Michael says, come in, and she sees his thing, which was so small. If it was an iPod, it would be a shuffle.
Yeah, his dangling participle.
Yeah. She, of course, also films Michael's apology videos in his office.
Oh, yeah.
Which we know that are clued into the fact that there are many that we don't get to see. And but I think the one that really stands out is in my mind is when she finds out that Michael is dating her mom.
I wish I drafted that blooper so bad.
Hi.
It's just beautiful work all around. But who, Michael? She's so interested.
Who is it?
It's gonna be okay.
Who?
Hi. Who, Michael? You could. That feels like you could paste that directly over Oscar's Where Dwight. Where?
Yeah.
Very similar moments.
It appears you already know.
That would have been a good time for Dwight to also go, hi. Hello. Yeah.
You know, Michael, speaking of Oscar, Michael also brings in Oscar for a couple moments like this. Number one, he says when he's about preparing for his colonoscopy, he's wondering if there's anything that he should do to prepare. Oscar scoots up in the chair. Mm. Yeah, what's going on? Like, real concern, you know. And then again, he brings him in. He goes, Oscar, you and I once sucked face in front of the office in an effort to, dispel myths about homosexuality. And then he lists all the places every man that he's been with.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Democratic National.
That two-man game with Dwight and Michael listing locations is awesome.
Yeah. And because you mentioned that, too, I love Dwight always kind of takes that spot, sort of leaning up on that table, on that file cabinet behind Michael.
Which Andy also briefly occupies when Dwight is in charge. Exact same spot, same position.
Yeah, over the shoulder.
Personality mirroring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I definitely think about Gay Witch Hunt, too, which is first we get Toby having a private moment with Michael, sort of explaining, you know, that he's crossed the line and he needs, you know.
I'm telling you, Oscar is actually gay. Okay.
Which then leads to Michael and Dwight peering out the blinds, wondering who else in the office might be gay.
This is one of the best devices of Michael's office, is Michael peering out of the blinds. Yeah.
That makes me think of
Ryan. And the camera's
being
peering
like,
in. You know, it's a good two-way mirror they got in there.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think of Ryan saying, you know, nothing doesn't compare to the way Michael looks. Exactly. Exactly. He's just staring at him and then just
the way he catches the camera looking at him. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Michael does apologize to Oscar and it kind of calls him in for that private.
Hey, man. I'm so sorry. Oh, it's not. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Which would have been enough, but he has to just keep going.
Well, he does that out in accounting, yeah, in front of everyone, which is why that part, at least. And then he talks to Oscar later.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of Toby, it reminds me of when Michael starts to find radon test kits all over the office. He's like, first I thought it was one of those things where you flip it over and it moves. And then I thought didn't want his creepy little disc. So like he starts to find them in his office, and it's like Toby is violating Michael's space. With his creepy little disc. Yeah.
His creepy little disc. Yeah.
Meredith has at least one fantastic moment in this, his office.
A lot of
which
nudity
is,
in the office.
A lot of nudity in the manager's office. Yes. This is maybe the other time when she flashes him in Christmas Party season 2.
Mm-hmm. Not nudity, but adjacent is Michael checking out Jan's boob job. Behind closed blinds.
Oh my God! Yes.
Your advice was good, Pam, but Jan's was bigger.
I mean, that also lines with Pam walking on Michael, which we've discussed. But then also, when Michael is eating the watermelon, and he says, "Today, or that is going to be the happiest day of my life," as Dwight zips up his pants.
Yeah, yeah, and Dwight giving birth to that watermelon on Michael's desk.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the most action-packed. Thing that happens inside that office, I would say. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would say grossest thing is probably the carpet, the poo. Todd Packer's leaving a dump. It's pretty gross. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I'd say.
Pretty gross. I mean, Dwight is quite animated as he's begging for mercy in the coup. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I have very good sales numbers.
I have a laundry machine.
What's the saddest thing that happens in that office?
Well, Jim says his goodbye
that. I think that would be
office.
It.
Oh,
that's me at least.
It's happy sad, but it's
at lunch tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's tears, real tears there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is pretty. All right. Well,
I mean, I think we've kind of covered many of the reasons and moments that happen within that office. I think I mean, I suppose I'm kind of reiterating what I said at the beginning, but it is like a space within a space, an office within an office. It is Michael's domain within the office that he manages. And it is a place where he can kind of, I mean, it's easy. It's hard for me to not view it kind of through the lens of Michael throughout this entire show, because it means so much to him to have this little space. Because, you know, when he's at home, what is his home life? You know, a cup of sangria, bag of vegetables before you know it, he's ready for bed. And like that office is more of his home. Like you think of when Pam has to make the decision about whether she's going to go home and get in a car accident or stay up watching Dwight, watching Michael edit in his office. That's where Michael is like his most creative as well. He's really empowered to use his creativity to work on the local ad. Like that little space is home to so many funny and amazing and heartfelt moments. And cringeworthy moments, as is the office way, within the run of the show. And it's fun to be able to kind of unpack what that can mean to Michael and to everyone else. Yeah.
It's sort of the innermost sanctum of the office. It is the inside of the mind of the central character of the show is where he talks about what's on his mind. It's where he does his talking heads. It's where we learn a lot of things about him. So very much, yes, it is the core of the brain of the show is Michael's office, a very important location.
It's where he's safe when he's sad or when he's happy, as we get in the ultimatum when he has his sad and happy box he finds out whether or not Holly is engaged. Mm-hmm. And we get
go ahead. Sorry, please finish.
Oh, I was just going to say one of the greatest gifts of the office is Michael spraying Aaron with champagne.
You know, Michael says when mean salesmen are rude to his face, sometimes he goes to his moppy place, and it's the streetlight that he thinks was in Casablanca, but it's actually his office. This is his moppy place and his happy place. And if D'Angelo has his inner circle there, we can call it maybe Michael's inner square. Goodbye, my
wow, what a
goodbye, my friend.
Way to stick the landing there.
You've been the one. You have been the one for me. All right, let's wrap that up and head to the conference room.
That means conference room, 5 minutes. No, 5 seconds.
A couple quick things in the conference room here. As Sean mentioned at the top of the show, we want to do a quick shout out, quick thank you, run down to some thank yous. Yes. And we also have some mea culpas, some apologies that we want to get to as well. First up, though, let's do these thank yous. So here's where this came from. As I mentioned at the top of the show in housekeeping, we have Scott's Tots. These are our members. These are the people who are the wind beneath our wings. They are the staplers in our jello. They keep us going. And when they heard Sean and I were having bebes, some little nard dogs, little tunas, people got together and they got some donations together and they sent us some baby stuff, some gifts, some things to welcome these children into the world. And I mean, a beautiful gesture. I was floored just getting the awesome gifts. Have you looked through the stuff yet?
You know what? I haven't opened them because I didn't know, because I also have Edwin's gifts. So I wasn't sure if we wanted to do all that together.
Yeah, because I'm going to be visiting Portland relatively soon, or I will have been in Portland by the time you hear this. Mm-hmm. I'm the other baby on the way.
Well, yeah. much like Gabe's box of Saber stuff, I have already ripped mine open and gone through everything. So I won't go over all the specific gifts. I'll say it was a lot of office themed baby gifts. It's amazing.
That's so nice. Oh my gosh.
Including the Office. Remember we were talking about the Office children's book that came out. There is a copy of that in there.
Oh, incredible.
So I am very excited to introduce my kid to all this stuff. And you all made it possible. And like, it's just, gosh, Kayla organized this as usual. She is unequivocally the fourth member of this club, this podcast right now. And, and
true dat.
Big thanks, everyone. The queen, Kayla Higgins. So she also sent me a list of everyone who had donated and contributed. So just a quick run through of these names. Just want to say thank you. And I'll put a little music behind this on the show. We can't hear it now, but we will later.
Na 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 na.
100% what I should put on.
I wanna thank you for it.
You know, Edwin, if you sing that, then our podcast won't get taken off Spotify for copyright infringement. If you sing it,
I mean, I just know that part. I'd have to sing it again and again and again.
Do you want to go? Do you want to go back and forth on this, Sean, or you want me to do it, or how? What do you want to do?
Where is it?
I texted it to you.
How can I see? Okay.
I have names too.
Text in. I also sent it to Edwin.
Thank you. Thank you to Trina Mazzani,
Jennifer Landry,
Megan Barnes,
Ashley Toy,
Harley Wimberly,
Marley Marple. Oh, there he is. Britta Gibbons,
Megan Fay,
Jennifer Vaughn,
Leanne Skork,
Anne Marie Colosimo,
Allison Reigel,
Kelly Sommers,
Lauren Rayfield,
Laura Batt,
Tara Brown,
Tina Cianci,
Meredith Black,
Nami Kong,
and Kayla Higgins.
Kayla Higgins, the queen.
And Edwin James.
Thank you all so much.
Edwin James. I will say, Kayla sent me a message. And by the way, Ashley also helped with the quotes on the various gifts. You guys will see what those are when you open it. And Kayla wanted to say she called this entire operation Babies plus Edwin.
A very, very special thank you from me and from Ryan. This is like,
and me and Ant,
and above and beyond.
Hi,
you guys are all so kind. I apologize for mispronouncing last names. You guys are just amazing and so, so special to us. And we really, really appreciate you.
Yep. Thank you again. Let's close out. Go to the other side of the spectrum here. Go to Apology Hill. Edwin, you want to go first?
Yeah, I feel this is one of those things where, first of all, we were going to suggest some names for this apologies segment. We've probably done this before and named it already. My suggestion is it takes a big man to admit his mistakes, and I am that big man.
Lovely. That's good.
I forgot. I suggested something at the top, and I forget what it was now.
It was, I state my regret.
Oh, I state my regret.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
that's right.
I think yours is better.
Okay. Well, ours are going to be more heartfelt than Dwight.
Yeah. So we use Discord on the show. We use Discord to communicate with our friends. Sometimes we have a fantasy basketball Discord channel. Congrats to Alex on winning fantasy basketball. And,
hey, thanks.
For sweeping, yeah, the finals and demolishing my team in the semis. But, okay, I use Discord almost exclusively on my phone. And if you've listened to the Facebook fan group fan podcast for this show, you can hear an anecdote about me learning to use Discord right before our 200th episode on the desktop. But in the Discord usage on my phone, I'm mostly responding to messages or kind of messaging on channels that already exist. But I often ignore the very bottom section of Discord where it has messages and notifications and stuff. There are messages and friend requests in here that I noticed earlier today from so long ago. So some of these messages are like months old and I feel terrible because I'm just now responding to them or seeing them. Some of these friend requests as well. So I apologize for completely ignoring everyone on accident. It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you saw when this video where T-Pain first realized that there was a segment of Instagram where there are message requests and he realized that he had not been interacting with all these people that wanted to connect with him, like celebrities and other musicians and stuff for years and years and years. Feels kind of like that. It takes a big man to admit his mistakes, and I am that T-Pain.
Well, thanks, Edwin, because I didn't know about that either. So I think I also owe an apology.
You know what I'm talking about down at the bottom, the four little icons?
Now I see it. I see it. I am sorry. I am seeing things here now. I will also apologize. I am also that big man. Mm-hmm.
So your apologies are that you are big men. Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Alex, do you state your regret?
Speaking of Discord, shout out to Alice and Anne, the only person who liked my Vanderpump Rules post. You are, we're besties now. So thank you.
Please watch The Path.
Right. Remember me? I was Jesse.
Think about that a lot. All right, I'll take this one next I state my regret, because we had a listener recently write in our recent Koi Pond episode. I was talking about when Pam and Andy are out on their sales calls, and one of the clients they go to makes a comment that, well, this is a family is very important. This is a family company, so it's nice to work with a family, basically. And I interpreted that in a through this Christian lens, and I don't think it was fair of me to do that. And the person who sent the email was like, hey, just want you to know, it kind of felt like using Christian as an insult. I did not mean that. I really apologize for saying it in that way. And I was raised Catholic. I have a lot of friends that are very Christian, and they're not at all any of the stereotypes that a lot of people will put on Christians. I didn't mean to use that as an insult. So I just wanted to clear that up. I do apologize. I think I projected onto this moment in the office. Because you know what? That client was probably just meant like it's a family business. Like it's been handed down through families.
Sure.
I didn't mean to put like a certain brand of Christianity on that moment. You know, that's not what I meant. So my apologies there.
Nice.
And on we go.
I assumed that it came from you watching a nonsensical Saber video starring Christian Slater. I thought that's what it
was. that video's got some megachurch vibes too, for sure.
It really does.
It
does. Wow.
It does. But
well, there you go. You are that big man too. And
because that makes me the devil.
You are. She is. She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Shouldn't joke about that.
Thank you again to the listener who wrote in for a very thoughtful email, and we really do appreciate that feedback. Yes. And you can always hit us. We're here to have fun. We don't want to offend anyone. Hit us up.
Look, there's a lot of types of Christian faiths that are very not what you think Christianity is, and I very much agree with that. So let's. Let's just clear the air there. Head for open for waters. Sure.
Well, thank you. Thanks, guys. I think we're out of time for the blind rankings. So we'll have to save that for another time.
Yep.
As always, you can email us a blind ranking at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can also call us and leave us a message at 503-694-9314. We love to play those messages on the show. Join our Discord. The link is in the show notes. Check out our store at mspcstore.com and check us out on patreon.com/Michael Scott. For $5 a month, you can become a Scott's Tot. You can get in these secret Discord channels, and you can get a bonus mailbag episode every month where we answer every question we get on Patreon, as well as ad feed, main feed episodes, and blah, blah, blah. So very special thanks to our tots. Very special thanks to the tots who sent us gifts. Special thanks to Kayla Higgins and Brianna, who runs our Discord. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who designs our artwork. Our opening song is sung by Edwin James, produced by Alex Ward, and written by BJ and Jesse Novak. This episode was recorded on location in Portland, Oregon, USA, and Zurich, Switzerland.
Thank you for listening, for hanging out with us, for sending us emails, voicemails, messages. Just know if you message Sean around Discord, the turnaround time on average is 3 months to the end of time. So just keep that in mind. But we will be your friends whenever we are smart enough to realize that there's another part of Discord. But just appreciate everyone being part of this little community and allowing us the opportunity to continue doing the show week after week. We're really excited for some more stuff we're going to be doing for the rest of this year, the way we planned it out. Episode 250 coming soon. We hope you stay with us for all of that and just appreciate everyone. And until then, take care, stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Bippity poppity, give me this up.
Yes, sir.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Good night.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.